Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. In a few moments, I'll be shining the spotlight on Pope Benedict XVI's pastoral journey to the United States. By the theme of Christ, our hope, it marks the 8th abroad of his pontificate. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. As we speak, Benedict XVI is in the United States for the first time in his pontificate on the second leg of this journey, which began in Washington on the 15th of April. In fact, on Friday the 18th, Pope Benedict became the third pope to address the United Nations at its New York headquarters. Later on in this programme, I'll be bringing you a special feature focusing precisely on the other three papal visits to this international body. But meanwhile, let's shine the spotlight on Benedict XVI, who flew into New York from Washington, D.C. in glorious weather, first by plane and then by helicopter, before being driven to the United Nations imposing building in Manhattan, where he was greeted by the United Nations Secretary General, Mr. Ban Ki-moon. It's a visit which coincides with the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was signed back on the 10th of December 1948. It was the first statement of fundamental freedoms to be approved by leaders from every continent and of every race, language, and religion, one which since then has gradually expanded, encompassing specific standards for women, children, disabled persons, minorities, migrant workers, and other vulnerable groups who now possess rights that protect them from discriminatory practices that had long been common in many societies. And as expected on Friday, Pope Benedict paid tribute to this declaration in his address at the United Nations, stressing how this document, which proclaimed the equality of all people, the basic right to life and to freedom, liberty of conscience and the free practice of religions, was the result of a convergence of different religions and cultural traditions. But to hear more about Pope Benedict's visit to the United Nations, I'd like to turn to Sean Patrick Lovett, who's currently in New York and has reported on this landmark event for us, during which, as you'll hear in a moment, Pope Benedict spoke both in French and English. Sean begins his report by affording us a splash of colour. Indeed, he picks up on a remark Pope Benedict himself made, namely, "Here in this glass palace, the art on display has its own way of reminding us of the responsibilities of the United Nations organization." But let's join Sean.
They hang on walls or stand in huge display cases, and they add a welcome splash of colour to architect Oscar Niemeyer's cold glass and steel corridors of power. They're the gifts bequeathed to the United Nations headquarters in New York by visiting heads of state and other dignitaries over the years. They include an exquisitely carved ivory landscape from China, a pair of bronze kettle drums from Jamaica, a series of Persian carpets from Iran, decorated with the portraits of past UN Secretary Generals, a reproduction of a Norman Rockwell painting inscribed with the so-called Golden Rule, "Do unto others," a gift from the United States. But it's the gift of another prestigious guest, left here 13 years ago, that strikes the imagination because of its simplicity and significance. It's a mosaic depicting a white dove on a gold background, a memento of John Paul II's visit to the UN in 1995, and a symbolic reminder of the ideal that both he and his predecessor Paul VI came here to defend: peace. In his address to the General Assembly, Pope Benedict XVI carried the conversation a step further, picking up from John Paul II's inspirational Family of Nations address of 13 years ago. He moved from the recognition of the unity of the human family into the responsibility to protect human dignity by guaranteeing human rights. The 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights provided the backdrop to his reflections, which focused on the affirmation that not only are rights universal, but so is the human person, the subject of those rights. The Pope also made a specific appeal for the right to religious freedom. It should never be necessary, he said, to deny God in order to enjoy one's rights.
It should never be necessary to deny God in order to enjoy one's rights.
In other words, rights are only universal if they have a transcendental dimension. But it was Benedict XVI's greeting to United Nations staff that added a more personal and, judging from the applause, more familiar flavor to his first New York appointment. In fact, he described them as a family.
Headquarters here in New York could be described as a home, a place of welcome and concern for the good of family members everywhere.
And told them they represent a microcosm of the whole world.
The person here constitutes a microcosm.
In which each individual makes an indispensable contribution from the perspective of his or her particular cultural and religious heritage. Most importantly, he compared the UN headquarters in New York City to Vatican City, as a place with a worldwide mission to promote peace and justice.
Here, within a small space in the busy city of New York, is housed an organization with a worldwide mission to promote peace and justice. I'm reminded of a similar tryst in scale between Vatican City State and the world in which the Church exercises her universal mission and apostolate.
Maybe that's why Benedict XVI chose as his gift and reminder of this historic visit an original etching that carries his coat of arms above a bird's eye view of Vatican City State. With the Pope in New York, I'm Sean Patrick Lovett.
And now moving on in the broadcast, it's time to enjoy a conversation Sean had with one of the people who were on hand to welcome Pope Benedict at the UN. He's the head of the Holy See's Permanent Observer Mission to the United Nations, Archbishop Celestino Migliore. Sean spoke to him earlier in the week.
Monsignor Migliore, the Pope's visit is coming on the 60th anniversary of the Declaration of Human Rights, which was proclaimed on December 10th in 1948. As representative of the Holy See to the United Nations, in your opinion, what are the most critical points of the application of that declaration today?
Well, the application depends primarily on the interpretation and value that one gives to the declaration. Today, one does not find only one of the most fundamental rights that is not neglected or violated somewhere in the world. And this is due to the persistent belief that the governments are to give the rights to citizens and determine the scope and extent rather than consider them as innate rights and inherent in the human person. And then we need to raise legal cooperation. In fact, the production of the new standards and the perfection of mechanisms for implementation proceed at a high rate. And not all countries are able to keep the pace. In this sense, the legal cooperation among countries and the assistance of international organizations are valuable components and indispensable to the application of human rights.
Would you say that the voice of the Catholic Church is being heard in the context of the United Nations today?
Well, the Church is held in consideration above all for its contribution to maintain alive and nourish spirituality and transcendence, without which society fragments. In addition, its message based on universal fraternity, reconciliation, proximity with man and nature, makes it a natural ally in dialogue and cooperation for development. UN agencies, funds, and programs that operate in the fields of education, development, humanitarian assistance, maintain a relationship of collaboration with local churches also present in the most remote corners of the earth.
And our thanks there go to Archbishop Celestino Migliore, who heads the Holy See's Permanent Observer Mission to the United Nations, who was speaking there to Sean Patrick Lovett. And finally, a change of pace and tone. As mentioned earlier, Benedict XVI wasn't the first pope to address the United Nations. But as I don't want to give too much away right now, if you wish to hear the whole story, stay tuned, as I take a bird's eye view of all of the free papal visits to the United Nations, that's before Pope Benedict's, with sound from our archives as well as impressions. It was October 1965, when, in a groundbreaking gesture, Paul VI, the first pope ever to visit the United States, addressed the General Assembly of the United Nations for the first time in history.
L'humanité devra mettre fin à la guerre, ou c'est la guerre qui mettra fin à l'humanité. Il n'est pas besoin de longs discours pour proclamer la finalité suprême de cette institution.
He did so exactly 20 years after the founding document of this international body was officially ratified in the aftermath of 6 years of war. As I discovered among those present at this event was Cardinal John Foley, who at the time was a young student priest in journalism at Columbia University. Not so long ago, I asked him to put this moving moment into context for us.
I was assigned to cover his appearance there. It was a very historic occasion, and Pope Paul made, in French, an impassioned plea for peace. Jamais la guerre, jamais plus la guerre. Never war, no more war.
Jamais plus la guerre, jamais plus la guerre. C'est la paix. La paix qui doit garder le destin des peuples et de toute l'humanité.
I wondered what kind of welcome this apparently austere-looking first pilgrim pope received as he invited the representatives of nations to respect that pact uniting them, that oath to change the future history of the world.
It was stirring. You could see that the people there were deeply touched. Even some of the people from communist states felt the power of what he was saying. It was also, a high point for the Catholic Church in the United States, because a pope had never visited the United States before. And it was a marvelous experience in the church in the United States, which was probably at its most structurally strong. There hadn't begun to be the shrinking of the school system. The number of priests and sisters was probably the greatest that it had ever been in its history. And it seemed to be not only a visit of the Pope to the United Nations, but in a sense a ratification of the strength and goodness of American Catholicism. And I was very impressed by that because he recognized the high level of religious practice, the deep prayer life, the profound belief of American Catholics, and their excellent formation in Catholic schools at that period.
Because he was very, very modern pope, no doubt. I mean, he was thinking ahead. I think that came right from his childhood, when you're conversing not in terms of what happens today, but what was going to happen tomorrow, and how what you're doing can influence what's happening tomorrow. That's the whole trend.
The late Monsignor Carroll Abbing, the Irish-born founder of Boys Town, who enjoyed close ties with the United States, was also a good friend of Paul VI. He once told me how he accompanied the Pope on that occasion, painting a picture of this Pope so often described as brilliant, but bafflingly ill at ease on public occasions, it seems erroneously.
I was present, actually, when he came into the Assembly of the United Nations. And I think it was one of the, moment of tension. Before he came in to the Assembly, there was a feeling of tenseness, of anticipation. I don't say worry, but, you know, what impact will this have? I mean, after all, the Pope is in foreign territory, you might say. He's coming in front of people who like him, who don't like him, who like the Church, who are opposed to the Church, opposed to the philosophy, thinking of the Church. And he's going in and he's going to speak. So I think everybody is tense. And then he came in, self-possessed, but very delicately, you see, walked in. And there's a kind of rustle over the people. Everybody's looking. I mean, even the most, blasé men of state are. And he walks up to the middle, you see, and then the question where he's going to sit, and he's told where to sit, you see. And normally the Pope will go to the centre, you see. No, and this doesn't concern him the slightest, you see. And then he spoke with, again, I keep on using the word simplicity. It was that, you see, very directness.
Vous enseignez aux hommes la paix. L'ONU est la grande école où l'on reçoit cette éducation. Et nous sommes ici.
With tremendous impact. I felt this so much so because I felt, you know, along with all these other very important people, people thinking with from different continents, from different religious thinking, philosophy of life, different political ambitions, ethnic. And here is this man very much alone, and everybody's scrutinizing him. He is sure of himself, sure as a priest, sure as a Christian, and sure as Pope. He has a job to do, and he's happy. He's happy. I don't think he was worried in the slightest. Probably the only person there who wasn't, you see.
A decade and a half later, another Roman pontiff was to follow in the footsteps of Paul VI, the pontiff from Poland, whose stage presence no one doubted. As you'll certainly have guessed, it was John Paul II. For the record, on the first of his two visits to the United Nations headquarters. Once again, it was October, and once again, Cardinal John Foley was present, this time acting as English language press secretary for the event.
The second was in 1979, when Pope John Paul II made his visit to Ireland, the United States, and the United Nations. And that was a tremendous privilege to be involved in that. And to be more intimately involved, I guess you could say, in the preparation for the visit and the distribution of texts to journalists, in trying to explain to journalists around the country what the Pope was doing. So that was a fascinating experience. And the presence of a Pope who came from Eastern Europe and was a symbol of resistance against atheistic communism and against all systems which did not recognize the dignity of the human person as a child of God was a stirring experience. The visit of Pope Paul VI was stirring because it was the first time a pope had come, and he made an excellent presentation on behalf of peace. The second appearance of a pope, that of Pope John Paul II, was perhaps even more powerful because this time the pope spoke in English, and also the roots from which he came were somewhat different, and it gave an even more profound symbolic value to his presence and to his words.
Every human being
living on Earth is a member of a civil society, of a nation, many of them represented here.
Those represented heard Pope John Paul highlight the human dimension of the work of the United Nations. However the political and social situations may change, he stressed, the United Nations must stay true to its commitment to serve, first and foremost, the needs of individual human beings. And he prayed that it would always remain the supreme forum of peace and justice for all people.
Each one of you, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, represents a particular state, system, and political structure, but what you represent above all are individual human beings. You are all representatives of men and women, of practically all the people of the world, individual men and women, communities and peoples who are living the present phase of their own history and who are also part of the history of humanity as a whole. This relationship is what provides the reason for all political activity, whether national or international, for, in the final analysis, this activity comes from man, is exercised by man, and is for man.
Years on, Pope John Paul returned to the United Nations for the second time. Once again, it was the month of October, and more significantly so than ever. This time, his visit coincided with a special anniversary, half a century since the founding document of this international body was ratified. In October, as you'll recall. But all those years on, that initial spirit of celebration was tempered by doubt. Let's recall for a moment how, following the high hopes for a better world, directly after the demise of the repressive communist regimes, when the United Nations was held up as an independent arbiter of that new-found world peace, the rosy image of this body had begun to fade. In fact, despite successes reaped across national boundaries through the many different organisations dedicated, among other things, to development, food distribution, elimination of disease, there were also increasingly stories of failure, stories of wars. But as Cardinal Renato Raffaele Martino, who headed the Holy See's permanent observer mission at the United Nations in those years, once told us,
the United Nations has not always succeeded in setting up effective means for the just resolution of international conflicts, nor have its policies for development always been positive. For instance, from 1945 to today, 187 conflicts have been counted, with more than 40 million victims. Mankind has known, since 1945, only 60 days of complete peace. And at this moment, there are 41 centers of war on our globe. if the nations are not perfect, neither is the United Nations, for its vision and accomplishments are the fruit born of the participating parties. This is not reason enough to abandon the United Nations. When a sick person dies in an emergency room, we do not destroy the hospital. So any talk of dismantling the United Nations because of its flaws or imperfections is a serious error. The United Nations is like a mirror which reflects the face of the nations of the world. And if the nations are not perfect, neither is the United Nations.
But let's listen to Pope John Paul's own words on that occasion, 20 years after his first address, with a far frailer voice, as you'll notice in a moment.
My visit to the United Nations came on the 50th anniversary of its founding, 30 years after my predecessor, Pope Paul VI, spoke there and called for no more war, war never again. This is the task now facing the United Nations, and one which should see the organization transform itself into a true family of nations.
A true family of nations where every culture and tradition would then be able to make its own contribution to the human family, John Paul II stressed. One which would preserve its particular identity, its self-respect and dignity, while denouncing forms of ideological nationalism which sow hate and destruction rather than peace and progress. The Pope's words were viewed as encouraging. As the rector of the North American College at the time, Timothy Dolan, currently Archbishop of Milwaukee, picked up on following that visit.
I found his speech to the United Nations to border on the poetic, especially when he spoke about national rights, and especially when he spoke about freedom, the necessity of freedom. And the world needs that at this time. The United Nations needs optimism, confidence, hope. I don't think we realize the boost that a papal visit gives to the United Nations.
A boost, then, Pope John Paul certainly gave on that occasion, repeating those words he had so often chosen to pronounce, right from the start of his pontificate. Do not be afraid. Words he repeated once again in that last address of his to the United Nations. We must not be afraid of the future, he stressed. Together we must build a society more worthy of man, a civilization of love, which will witness a new springtime of the human spirit. And that brings us up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again at this same time tomorrow. Laudetur Jesus Christus.